This is Understanding Israel-Palestine. I'm your host, Eamon Ormseth. Before we begin, a few news briefs. Israeli troops seized control of Gaza's vital Rafah border crossing on Tuesday, in what the White House described as a limited operation, as fears mount of a full-scale invasion of the southern city, and talks with Hamas over a ceasefire and hostage reliefs remain on a knife's edge, according to Reuters. The UN warned of a potential collapse of the flow of aid to Palestinians from the closure of the Rafah crossing from Egypt and the other main crossing into Gaza, Kerem Shalom, from Israel, at a time when UN officials say northern Gaza is experiencing full-blown famine. The Israeli foray came after hours of whiplash in the now seventh-month-old Israel-Hamas war, with the militant group saying Monday it accepted a ceasefire proposal to end the war that Israel insisted fell short of its own core demands. President Biden said Wednesday that the U.S. will not provide Israel with weapons for an offensive in Rafah and at the same time acknowledge that Israel has used powerful American-made weapons in deadly attacks in Gaza, according to CBS News. In an interview with CNN, the president was asked about the U.S. pause last week of a shipment of 2,000-pound bombs to Israel and whether those bombs were used to kill civilians in Gaza. Mr. Biden replied, "Civilians have been killed in Gaza as a consequence of those bombs." He went on to say that if the Israelis go into Rafah, then I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah. In addition to the bombs, the president said such weapons would also include artillery shells. Student protests against the Israeli war in Gaza have rocked the United States over the past few weeks, prompting a police crackdown on many campuses and more than 2,000 arrests. Students who have set up protest encampments at universities across the country are calling for their institutions to withdraw all investment from firms complicit in Israeli abuses against Palestinians. Today we're joined by Robert Bletcher. Robert is director of the Future of Conflict Program at International Crisis Group. He has worked in and on the Middle East for some 30 years, including more than a decade as Crisis Group's Israel-Palestine director. Most recently, he was the lead author of Stopping Famine in Gaza. The International Crisis Group, or Crisis Group, is an independent, nonprofit, non-governmental organization with some 120 staff members on five continents working through field-based analysis and high-level advocacy to prevent and resolve deadly conflict. Robert, welcome to Understanding Israel-Palestine. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
You were the lead author for ICG's recent report called Stopping Famine in Gaza, which was published on April 8th, about a month ago. I'd like to unpack this report a bit and paint a picture of it before we discuss more recent news. What are the principal findings of this report?
Well, I guess there are two main findings to be aware of. The first is that in order to truly stop the famine in Gaza, we need a ceasefire. It is possible to increase the amount of aid and other necessary materials going into Gaza without a ceasefire, but in order to deal with the depth of the problem, a ceasefire is necessary. The second principal finding is that not only is aid access a problem, but aid distribution is a very big problem as well. And the only way that we're going to be able to effectively distribute aid is with the assistance or oversight of the civilian authorities. That includes the civil police in Gaza. The civil police are part of the Gaza government, which answers ultimately to Hamas. But the civilian police is the least politicized, which is not to say unpoliticized. They are the least politicized of the security apparatuses there. And without any other option for oversight or protection, there's little other choice to work through the civil authorities. So that's the two main things. I guess you could say one on access, one on distribution. More needs to get in and it needs to reach the people.
And as you said, both of those goals being best achieved if a ceasefire is realized. In the absence of a ceasefire, there being some policies and mechanisms that can help both access and distribution, but as long as the conflict, the hostilities continue, that will be very difficult. Is that fair to say?
It's certainly it will be easier for Israel to take steps if they're getting something in return, which they would get in case of a ceasefire. There are a number of steps that should be taken, and some have been taken in the past month, right? Since we published that report, the US has been exerting a fair amount of pressure on Israel, and Israel has adjusted certain things. There are more trucks that are getting in every day now, although trucks are not necessarily the best measure of whether sufficient supplies are getting in. A new mechanism for coordinating military and humanitarian operations is supposed to be getting started. There are things that have changed, but I think it's important in terms of what's happened since the publication of the report to keep in mind that better is not the same thing as sufficient. Things indeed are better, but the bar was so low, so incredibly low, that it's still very far from being sufficient, very far from being sufficient to stop the famine, which the gold standard organization, the IPC, it's an organization that works in partnership with several UN organizations as well as other organizations. That the when they did their assessment, they assessed that Gaza would soon be in famine. Others since then have assessed that Gaza indeed is in famine. So the bar was so low that it really needs to be raised significantly, not just a little bit.
So you just mentioned the term famine and the IPC and other organizations that make that determination of when a famine is occurring. So there's a technical aspect to this. Can you describe a little bit more about that process and how this organization, the IPC, and what criteria they use to determine that a famine is occurring?
Yeah, the IPC stands for Integrated Food Security Phase Classification. It's a mechanism in a system that, as you said, determines when there's a famine. Although it's when I say determine, it's important to separate between assessment and declaration. Those are two different things. The assessment is a technical exercise. The declaration of a famine is a political exercise, which is done on the basis of the technical assessment. In order for a technical assessment to conclude that there's famine, three thresholds need to be met. The first is that there needs to be a certain amount of food scarcity or severe lack of food consumption among a certain percentage of the population. The second is a certain threshold of acute malnutrition among children. And the third is that there need to be two deaths per 10,000 people per day from non-trauma sources, usually, or non-trauma reasons, usually malnutrition and disease. So when the IPC did its last assessment, it concluded that the first two thresholds had been met. The first had, at least in northern Gaza, that the first had long been met, and the second, acute malnutrition in children, had like just was just being met at that at the time of the March assessment. It was the third threshold, the two non-trauma deaths per 10,000 people per day, that had not yet been met. And that's why the IPC said that famine was imminent as opposed to having already started. Since then, people have looked at that number and said, there's not a very good monitoring mechanism for this in Gaza. Obviously, there's the government is being targeted. The main deaths that are being broadcast are either because of the fighting or because of visual imagery that looks very much like starvation, meaning gaunt faces and sunken eyes and in extreme, like extreme emaciation. So, if there are deaths, say, from disease, which are made worse by starvation, by malnutrition, we might not be seeing those. And in fact, it's likely that there are enough of those happening to cross the threshold. So, look, just a few days ago, Sidney McCain, the head of the World Food Program, said that parts of Gaza are in famine, sort of on the basis, I don't think of any newly published numbers, but on the basis of what their observations are about what they're seeing on the ground.
The report was written there was imminent famine in northern Gaza. Since then, based on a variety of factors, including visual evidence, but also what aid has been going in and where has it been going, it's reasonable to conclude that famine has already set in parts of Gaza. Is that fair to say?
You know, yeah, I think if you concluded that, that would not be unreasonable. However, I just want to stress that the statistical threshold for famine is quite high, or I guess low, depending on how you're looking at it. And it was intentionally made to be a hard threshold to attain because people who set this up only wanted it to apply in the worst of circumstances. The IPC is generally a conservative organization. Crisis group only wants to make statements on the basis of the best actual statistical evidence that we have. A reasonable person could look at what's happening and say, yes, there is famine in pockets of Gaza, but I think it's important to be careful that one goes with the evidence, the statistical evidence.
Certainly. And I know that the conflict in Gaza, especially targeting of humanitarian institutions such as hospitals and civil institutions, has made collecting some of these statistics, especially in northern Gaza, a lot more difficult.
There has been a lot of controversy about especially the death numbers the numbers of casualties that have been produced by the Ministry of Health in Gaza, which is part of a Hamas-led government. When I say controversial, there are accusations on the part of some that those numbers are manipulated. The Ministry of Health has long had a very good reputation for producing precise figures. Those numbers have been verified by a number of outside organizations, and even the government of Israel has been using those because they don't have another way to get numbers that are any better. You know, that said, if you know, as long as we have this time to go into it, the extent of damage in Gaza has broken down the ability of the government to gather information as it has in the past. And so it's not quite the same reporting mechanism that is being used now as has been used in the past. So I think it is possible. I think one always should be asking questions about where one's information comes from. And the question of how do you know that is always a really important question to ask. And I do think it's fair to note that the way that the government is collecting information now is a little bit different. But I still think that these are the best numbers that we have to go on, and they're reasonably accurate.
If you're just tuning in, this is Understanding Israel-Palestine. I'm your host, Eamon Ormsed. I'm interviewing Robert Bletcher, Director of the Future of Conflict Program at International Crisis Group. We're discussing the April 8th report he co-authored entitled Stopping Famine in Gaza. Yeah, something I appreciated in the report was the care taken to characterize and distinguish between the various parts of of governance in Gaza. You know, before October 7th, at least internally speaking, Gaza was controlled by Hamas. Now, obviously, that's changed because there are certain areas where there's virtually no governance. But in the report, there are pains taken to note that the health ministry, as you said, or the civil police differ from the Qassam brigades, and that for this reason, we should be careful when we consider how we evaluate information coming out of Gaza. It's not so simple as saying that this is the Hamas-run government. We need to go into the various parts of the government and say, well, this is really the guys who sweep the street. They're not as politicized. Whereas this is a Hamas battalion and they're taking orders directly from military commanders. How does that sort of distinction inform crisis groups' approach to this conflict?
Well, our mandate is the prevention of conflict and resolution of conflict, and so we look at the situation on the ground in a lot of granular detail to figure out exactly what's going on, and how do we try to get to a place where different actors, at least most basic essential needs, can be taken care of while ending deadly violence. And so, in that sense, it's very important for us to understand the mechanism of governance and how things work. And the what you bring up now is key to that, because it has to do with how Hamas organizes both its governance and its military forces. So you mentioned the Qassam Brigades, which are Hamas's military wing. Though that military wing is externally focused on external enemies, chiefly Israel. It's military. It has a military and an intelligence apparatus. It's the intelligence apparatus is called the Istihbarat. They work That intelligence apparatus works hand in hand with the military brigades. And those brigades have sustained a good amount of damage in the war. As people might know, Israel has done a lot of damage to about 18 of those. There's about four that are left, plus the remnants of the others. And those are either spread out in Gaza, mainly underground, or they are, or they're, or the remaining four, plus whatever remnants have made their way to Rafah in the south, are in the south, the last part of the strip that has not been taken on the ground by Israeli forces. So that's what's externally focused. Then you have a Gaza government, which ultimately answers to Hamas. It's a in the sense that you have a non-state actor that has set up a territorial governing unit. It took over what was there before it took full control in 2007. There was a pre-existing Palestinian Authority government there. And Hamas was partially in charge of that because they won the elections in 2006. But then in 2007, after some clashes with their main competitor, they took over the strip in its entirety. And they took over the government. They replaced some people. They kept some people. There are a variety of different political factions represented in much of the government, not all of the government, but in much of the government, and especially in the civil police. There are various political, all of the political factions are there. The most powerful people are affiliated with Hamas, and the civil authorities have other security agencies as well. The civilian police are not the only one. There's also a domestic intelligence agency, which you could call like the internal security agency, that is a separate intelligence agency that from the Istihbarat, which is which is the Qassam military one. So, I mean, I think this is where it starts to get tricky. Even legally, it starts to get tricky. Like the internal security agency has a regime security function, right? Like just like the FBI in the States, if the US were under attack, would have a government security function. In Gaza, it has one also. And so Israel claims that there is an overlap. They probably, with some justification, they claim that there's an overlap between the senior ranks of the civil police and this internal security agency. And so Israel has targeted some of those figures who are key figures in regime security, but are also key figures in other governance functions, like getting food to the people who need it. This is where one of like the trickiest, stickiest, most difficult, horrible areas are. Israel is going after Hamas. It's an open war goal to destroy Hamas's governance capacity, but it's that governance capacity which is protecting aid getting to people. So this is one of the big problems with Israel having not declared from the beginning, or having made any plans for what would happen after the war. They've created a situation where the only force on the ground that can protect anything for the people is the force that they're trying to destroy. So how are you going to feed and protect people?
Yeah, the report notes either the first flower massacre, in which, as far as I understand, Israel had arranged with a local family to do some sort of aid distribution, but the situation got chaotic and Israeli forces ended up killing over 100 starving Palestinians, and that has been actually somewhat of a pattern, that organized groups attempting to distribute aid after the police were declared to be targets, because the police technically are part of the government. Even groups that started to organize aid after that have also been targeted by Israel, I guess, under the pretext or that they're collaborating with Hamas. Is that sort of the justification with which Israel is targeting these people attempting to distribute aid?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Israel in February published their quote unquote day after plan, which involved working with big families and clans in Gaza in order to administer the strip after the destruction of Hamas. The problem with that is that that's more of a fantasy than an actual plan. Like you can't govern a territory through alternate social units. It's like kind of a fan. It's kind of like a Lawrence of Arabia fantasy about how Arab society works. It's just not how Gaza works. Like there's a government. You need a government in order to govern people, especially in the north of Gaza, which is very urbanized, even in comparison to the south. So, like there was just no way that was going to work. But Israel was looking for an alternative that didn't require actually coming up with an alternative. So they came up with this idea of working with the families. And they tried to implement it, but for the most part, the families told them that they weren't interested. Partially because the families, of course, people in Gaza don't like Israel. They see them as occupiers. Also, there was one case where a family did seem to be a bit more open. Hamas has ways of both cooperation or co-optation as well as coercion in order to stop that. So there were some clashes between Hamas's security and that family. There were some members of that family that were kidnapped, and that was kind of the end of that cooperation. Israel seems to largely have, for right now, has abandoned trying to set up that kind of alternative itself, the family alternative itself, but it has not abandoned going after the Hamas governance structures, including those that are feeding the people. You're entirely correct that they continue to do that now. And the justification when civilians are killed, and I will note that Israel has killed civilians who are representatives of the same families that Israel itself reached out to when they were trying to more actively recruit allies. So if you work with us, we'll give you food and we won't kill you. If you take food working with the other side, we will assassinate you. That's still ongoing. But like I said, Israel seems to have, at least right now, realizing that they couldn't get very far, at least for right now, they have relaxed on the family alternative.
Yeah, so somewhat stymied in their attempts to use aid to exert governance in at least parts of Gaza, Israel has been. So I wanted to get a little bit into current events with the time we have remaining. Just yesterday, Israel announced it was invading Rafah. There's been many airstrikes in Rafah, and tanks at least have taken the Rafah border crossing, and the Israeli flag has been raised at that border crossing, at least according to what I just saw on Twitter. At the same time as Hamas accepted a ceasefire deal proposed by Egypt and Qatar, that according to some sources would end the war, Israel rejected that ceasefire, saying it doesn't meet its terms. So a few questions based on this, and if my characterization of the events are a little off, feel free to jump in. But what can we expect the Israeli control of this crossing to mean, given that there's already a backlog of, I think, thousands of trucks at the Rafah crossing? What will this mean for the entrance of humanitarian aid into Gaza? That would be the first question.
Well, most trucks are not coming in through the Rafah crossing,
Okay.
so some do. So it could mean something, but most trucks are now getting in other ways. There are, I guess, three crossings now. In Israel, there's the Kerem Shalom crossing, which was the main crossing before October 7th. Although Rafah also was working before October 7th, there is a new crossing that for most of the war was a military crossing, but it has been used for other commercial goods now. And then there in the north, in response to pressure from the US and the humanitarian community, Israel reopened the Erez crossing, which formerly was only for people, but is now being used to get some goods in as well. There could be some impact on Rafah itself, but there are other ways for food to and other supplies to get in. I just in terms of how you talked about the ceasefire proposals, it's our understanding that what happened yesterday was that Hamas agreed with reservations to the proposal that was on the table, which is to say that they pushed the ball forward. But when Israel saw what those reservations were, they came out and they said, "This is not what we agreed to. This is not the deal that we agreed to." And so it's sort of like it's both and, right? It's like it was based on the text that they agreed to, but Hamas had some reservations. So that's where we stand now. Whether the two sides are able to bridge the remaining gaps remains unclear. There are, I think, a number of small gaps, but the single biggest issue is whether the agreement of any ceasefire will mean the end of the war, of a permanent or ongoing ceasefire. Hamas has insisted since the beginning of these negotiations that any ceasefire that it will agree to has to result in the end of the war. Israel has said, absolutely not. We will take a break, but we will not agree to end the war. So what we've seen is a prolonged period of wordsmithing and other ways of trying to get to a place where essentially both sides can say that they got what they needed.
So Hamas's primary goal being ending the war, Israel's primary goal being ending Hamas. Is that
Yeah,
somewhat?
I would. Well, actually, I think that is more right than a lot of people would like to say. I think, most Israelis would say our goal is to get the hostages back
Right.
and also to destroy Hamas as a threat to us. I think the way that the government has handled this, the Israeli government has handled it, has made pretty clear that they think about it like you do. Which is our primary goal is to destroy Hamas. There have been ministers who have, even like said that pretty much straight on, that we should not let a remaining, however many people are alive, because a lot of hostages have died, however many are left, we should not let them let that number distract the government from its war goal.
Okay, Robert Bletcher, Director of the Future of Conflict Program at International Crisis Group and author of the recent report, Stopping Famine in Gaza. Thanks for your time and thanks for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.